call the meeting of Rules and Legislative Administration to order. And thank you for your patience. Representative Benson?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for Tuesday, April 16th. I've read them. They look correct to me.
Representative moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Is there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, no. And that motion is adopted. I'd like to begin by moving the calendar of the day, the proposed calendar of the day. And just so people know, we're going to move Senate File 671, which is the Senate's version of the public safety bill, but Representative Paymar will be substituting the language from the House file into that. So as amendments are drawn up for the public safety omnibus bill, they should be drawn up for the House language and not the Senate language. Okay. So with that, I move the calendar for the day for Friday, April 19th. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, no questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those no, and that motion is adopted. Next, a little extra work to do today. I'm just looking for bill authors in the room. But I'd like to take up Representative Murphy M's bill first, and it's here because it has in it a bust, a memorial. A whole memorial. So I think people have that in their packet. It's House File 1184. I'm just waiting for Representative Murphy. All right. And we'll take up... she here? All right, Representative Murphy. Thank you.
What are you doing?
Welcome to the committee, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
So my first motion is that I would like to move that Senate File 1589 be passed and sent to the General Register. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. And that motion is adopted. And my next motion would be that I move to amend Senate File 1589 as follows. To delete everything after the enacting clause and insert the text of House File 1184, the second engrossment, which is in your packet. Is there any discussion? Are there any questions? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, you mentioned that there was a bust. Do we want to talk about that? Because I don't believe that was heard in government operations.
Representative Pepin, it's okay. We'll just get the bill into its order and then. Okay. Thank you. So are there any... Seeing no discussion on the motion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. And that motion is adopted. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering about the bust. I haven't seen that in here. And also, I see that the Sunset Advisory Commission repeal is in here, and we heard this in another bill after deadline, and it was after it was put in the state government bill, and I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and what your rationale was for putting the Sunset Advisory Committee commission language in the state government bill, and then just hearing it well after deadline, and what your kind of thought process was on that.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, that's why I'm here. Because the Rules Committee has to review all changes to the Capitol, artistic changes to the Capitol. And on page 7, line 7.8 to 7.17 is the Nellie Stone Johnson bust or statue language, which the State Government Finance Committee has in 1184, second grocery. And the Sunset Commission is in this bill because the LCC is one of our accounts, and the Sunset Commission is part of the was part of the LCC, and so when we were trying to balance the budget, we looked at all accounts to see if there was funding and that we could use. And we decided to take the unexpended funds of $139,000 that was in the Sunset, or in the LCC for the Sunset Commission. We thought it would be much better use of the money if we forwarded it to the legislative auditor, which is also one of our accounts, and who does the same type of work that we would like continue for reviewing of various agencies.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Murphy. I imagine we'll spend several hours on the Sunset Commission when we take the bill up, and I'll ask several more questions then. But I'm just wondering about the process, and I'm trying to understand how it was that the State Government Committee voted on that provision, and it's a major provision, repealing a Sunset Commission that was agreed up. It was a bipartisan compromise last year, and then it was actually repealed, or we voted on the repeal in state government, and then the bill was actually introduced the following week on a Monday. I think it was Thursday that you heard it, and that you didn't hear it. You just voted on it in state government, and then the following Monday, Representative Winkler introduced the bill, and then we heard the bill 2 days later, which didn't quite meet the rules deadline, even though we completely missed the deadlines. Even going past that, it even missed the 3-day posting rule that we try to get in the rules. And I'm just wondering the process of why did you put this in your bill before we even heard it in committee?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, we heard about the repeal of the Sunset Commission. And then, at the time that we heard it, we created the separate bill, and that was introduced. And then we voted on it after the bill had been introduced. We had the final vote for the commission, or for the committee, on the final vote of the committee, I believe.
Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering why this was, it was acceptable to miss the committee deadline process. I'm having a hard time, I think, as many members are, of understanding what the point of the deadlines are, because we talked about it earlier. We had I think it was March 2015 for the first deadline, March 22nd, and this wasn't, I don't think this made either deadline, and it was actually introduced after it was discussed in state government finance, and I don't understand the process, why we would do that. I think that was very unfortunate. It didn't give the members of the public enough time to come in and testify. It's very disappointing. And then but I'll move on. We'll spend several hours on that later when we get to the floor. I'm wondering, in addition to the Nellie Stone Johnson bust, which I think is ironic, it's $30,000 for a bust, whereas the Sunset Commission had $140,000 on a commission bipartisan commission that looks at every government agency and board and looks for streamlining and efficiency, but instead we're going to spend $30,000 on a bust of a very controversial figure, and I'm wondering if there are additional costs for busts in this bill.
There are no
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, there are no additional costs for busts in this bill, and this could be a statute, too, depending on how much money, imagine money, the people that liked it want to raise.
Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no, and that motion is adopted. And finally, I renew my motion that Senate File 1589 be passed as amended and sent to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? And that motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Murphy, for coming to the Rules Committee. It's nice to see you here. Up next is Representative Kahn, and she is with us already. And before us is the Omnibus Legacy Bill, which is House File 1183. Welcome to the committee, Representative Kahn. And I'd like to move that House File 1183 be passed and sent to the General Register. Representative Kahn, welcome to the committee.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. We're here for there are two amendments proposed.
Actually, I think I have one. There are five amendments in our packet, Representative Kahn. And so, I think we'll just.
You want me to talk about why, about the reason?
Well, Representative Kahn, I mean, if you'd like to speak briefly about. The reason why the bill is here is because it has a memorial.
The bill is here because it has a memorial. It actually adds three memorials. It adds the Nellie Stone Johnson. Here we do it as a bust in this one. It also adds the bust of two former U.S. Supreme Court justices. One is Harry Blackman, who truly belongs to be with his buddy, Supreme Court Justice Berger, who has a statue opposite, right at the entrance to the Supreme Court, with an empty alcove facing it, which is just a shrine for the statue of his buddy, Representative Blackman. In committee, Representative, here I am pushing a Republican who was appointed by a Republican governor to be
president.
And then my colleague, Representative Torkelson, adds an amendment. I believe it was a real amendment. Oh, okay. To add a Democrat and a Catholic, Pierce Butler, who is also a Supreme Court justice, to the package. So we now end up that we would honor all the Minnesotans who are Supreme Court justices, and I would imagine, except for states like big states like New York, that's probably a pretty high number for a kind of mid-sized state or a small state as ex-Supreme Court justices. So that's. So I'm here too. I do have one thing. I understand that maybe the Blackman one. Oh, and an argument, someone said, well, why would you have Nellie Stone Johnson in two bills? It might be a decision about, in this bill it's funded from legacy funds, because it's clearly a legacy, and in Representative Murphy's bill it would be funded from general funds, and at the end we might be deciding where we want to take the money from. So that is the two differences. I do have something on the, I know there's an amendment to remove the Blackman bust, that I do have something on that.
And there's someone coming to get the handout. Okay. It'll be distributed to the committee. Well, we have amendments in our packet. And I don't know who's offering which amendment.
I don't know if you want to do these other two first. Three of them are mine. But
would you like to proceed?
Sure. Yep. I'll offer the RA-13-035 amendment.
Representative Dowd moves the RA-13-035 and requests a roll call. Representative Dowd, would you like to explain your amendment, please?
This one removes the Blackman bust and reduces the appropriation by one-third.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. Representative Kahn?
Well, does Representative Dowd want to explain why he wants to do it?
Representative Dowd?
You know, just because it's a controversial thing. I know it's been controversial in the past, and frankly, I think we should spend our time working on things that we can agree on. So remove the controversy from the bill.
Okay. Well, I guess
Representative Kahn.
I would make the statement that this time I don't think there should be controversy over honoring a very important Minnesotan. Harry Blackman grew up in Dayton's Bluff in St. Paul. He attended the same grade school as Justice Warren Burger. They served together on the Supreme Court for 16 years. He served from 1970 to 1994. He has very deep Minnesota connections, an adjunct professor at the U of M Law School and William Mitchell, resident counsel for the Mayo Clinic, appointed to the Eighth Circuit Appeals Court by President Eisenhower, to the Supreme Court by Nixon, and was confirmed in a 94-0 vote in the Senate floor. This amendment is strange because we already have the bust of Warren Burger, who served from 69 to 86, and the controversy is apparently because of Blackman's vote on Roe versus Wade. Well, they both voted the same on Roe versus Wade in 1973. Blackman just wrote the decision which he was assigned to write by Burger. So then let's get to Pierce Butler, who we're leading. And Pierce Butler has an interesting connection with this, too. He was a Supreme Court justice from 1923 to 39. He was one of the four people who were called the Four Horsemen on the court in the 1930s, who were known for their opposition to New Deal legislation. But the interesting thing, which ties into this entire pro-choice, pro-life controversy, was that Pierce Butler was the dissenting vote in a very important case called Buck versus Bell. This was a 1927 case which involved the involuntary sterilization of a young unwed woman named Carrie Buck, who was supposed to have tubal ligation ordered on her by the Virginia law that permitted the sterilization of imbeciles. She had just been confined to a mental institution with very dubious aspects about that confinement. Experts for the state testified that there were three generations of imbecility. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, one of the most revered Supreme Court justices, wrote the opinion which had the famous line in it, "Three generations of imbeciles are enough." This was the strongest statement in the U.S. in the belief of the eugenics movement. Actually, 3 years after that, Pope Pius came out with a strong statement against the concept of eugenicists. Well, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes was joined by seven justices. The sole dissent was by Pierce Butler. Unfortunately, in those days, he didn't write a dissent. He just dissented. I don't know if his papers have been opened to find out why. It's interesting, too, because Holmes is ranked as perhaps the most influential jurist in American jurisprudence, and Butler is considered one of the least important justices appointed to the High Court. By 1916, eugenics was considered improper. But eugenics wasn't really, all eugenics legislation wasn't really thrown out until the decisions of Whitney versus Griswold and then Roe versus Wade, which affirmed the right for a woman to control her whole body. And that was the one that finally laid Buck versus Bell to rest. So I don't think there should be any controversy about it. We would honor two more Minnesotans who achieved a very important national perspective, and who are actually intimately connected for this long route that starts in 1920 '77 and really ends in 1973. I don't know if anyone who wants to defend eugenic sterilization at this table, but Supreme Court Justice Blackmun was very responsible in going back to this long trail to Pierce Butler and putting that to rest. So I hope we would vote down this amendment and go on and honor these people.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Anderson? I'll pass. Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Representative Dout renews his motion, and there's a roll call vote. Could you please call the roll? Representative Murphy? No. Representative Albright?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Representative Dout?
Yes.
Representative Dean? Yes. Representative Earhart?
No.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hillstrom?
No.
Representative Hoppe?
Yes.
Representative Portman?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Kelly?
Yes.
Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Lesh?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Loon?
Yes.
Representative Moline?
No.
Representative Norton?
No.
Representative Pepin?
Yes.
Representative Purcell?
No.
Representative Sanders?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Representative Ward?
Yes.
Representative Woodard?
Yes.
Representative Zellers?
Yes.
Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
There are 14 ayes and 13 noes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dout?
I'll withdraw my other two amendments.
So the A-33 and the A-34 have been withdrawn.
Correct.
Thank you, Representative Dout. There's someone here who wants to talk about the A-60. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would move the A-60 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A-60 amendment. Would you like to speak to the amendment briefly, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. In House File 1183, there's a provision relating to renewing the rulemaking for the critical area. There was some controversy with that in both the Legacy and the Ways and Means Committee. Since the Ways Committee met, I have been working with interested parties to remove some of the controversy related to that. So I'm going back to a 2009 statute and removing sections and adding some language that helps clarify what the rulemaking process would do. So I think this better defines, makes that provision less controversial.
So he's just...
Other questions? Seeing no questions.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dell.
Quick question.
Yes, Representative Dell.
On the amendment, lines 4.13 and 4.14 talk about removing some language, and as I look at that in the bill, looks like it's removing... language that says, and this is in relationship to public television, priority should be given to projects that have a non-state cash match of at least 25% of the total eligible project costs. This doesn't seem to relate to the rest of this amendment. Is that intentional or is that a drafting error?
Or is that from somewhere else?
Representative
Kahn?
Well, this, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dowd, this really kind of started as a technical amendment. And then with the addition of the stuff that Representative Hansen, this was the language on the public television was in as a mistake. We have language further in the bill that asks for contributions but doesn't have a requirement. We'd remove the requirement for amperes, and we're supposed to remove it from public television. Probably once this amendment got, once the Hansen thing got more involved, they probably should have done that separately. But that's totally technical.
So,
Representative Dowd.
Madam Chair, thank you. The so what you're saying, if I understand you right, there's some conflicting language in the bill. There's another area in the bill that deals with this, or some other place in statute.
Representative.
So you're pulling this out.
It's being pulled out of the bill. We removed the requirement. We're talking about matching requirements at several points within the bill. There's some place which gives preference to items in competitive grants process, that the amount of matching funds is one of the things there to look at. We had removed the match requirements for amperes before we put the bill together, but we didn't remove it from Minnesota Public Radio, and we intended to, and they brought it to our attention, so we did.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, in regard to the
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson.
Representative Hansen.
It was introduced as a bill, I believe it's 1782.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen. And when was the bill introduced?
Representative Hansen.
Representative Torkelson, it was introduced yesterday.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, did this bill get a hearing in any committees?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, will be heard this afternoon in the government operation.
Representative Dunn.
The part of the bill that was originally in the legacy bill was to just, which I thought was really pretty technical until I got involved in the subject, which was just to extend the rulemaking process. This was all in state law. There was a rulemaking process that had been set up, and the rulemaking process had run out the clock. So it was just to extend it. It was then decided that that was something that should go to the Government Operations Committee. And so if you read our complicated rules about how things in omnibus bills go to GovOp Committee, they just have to see. It doesn't necessarily have to be before. It just has to be seen at some time. And so we were sending that to be looked at, this, what I thought was just the rule extension, to be looked at in the GovOps Committee. It turned out that there was an enormous amount of controversy associated with the law. And so what this bill does then is clean up the controversy. So people involved in this have been Representative Dill, Bob Myers from the Department of Natural Resources, and then various people along the river. So what this does is take the very prescriptive language that was in the law out so that the whole thing can be dealt with in rules. And so I'm in GovOp for the rules part. Representative Hansen is here because he was involved in the original bill, which I understand went through 9 committees before it passed. And so this is now to take the prescriptive stuff out of the law so it can be dealt with in rules.
Representative Torkelson.
Representative Pepin, it's not an expedited rules process or anything like that. It's the full, formal, full-bore rules process.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the time for this rulemaking process did run out.
Yes,
correct?
Yes. And that was what my amendment was, to extend the time.
Representative Torkelson.
So we need more funding to proceed with this rulemaking. Is that correct?
Representative Kahn.
I believe the funding is in we don't have to put it in this bill. I believe the funding is in Representative Wagenius's bill for that. It's funding. I guess it's considered to be roughly $100,000, and I guess it can be eaten in the DNR budget.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn. So we have the language in one bill and the funding in another bill?
Representative Kahn.
Looks as if that might happen. That's happening. In my history in the legislature, that's happened before.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our history is much longer than mine. I acknowledge that.
I bet it's even happened in your history.
It seems a bit unusual that this language be in a legacy bill, the legacy funds, and their purpose seems unrelated to this.
I think the original thing was actually funded, was actually in a legacy bill. I think it was in a legacy project, a legacy issue.
Representative Dell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back to my same issue. It looks, as I look in the bill under the public radio section, lines 87.12 to 87.14, there's similar language in this for public radio that they would have to have that non-state cash match of at least 25%, but we're pulling it out for public television. It looks like it's also there for Minnesota Film and TV Board. You know, as I'm looking through the bill, it looks like it's there for everybody else, but Science Museum. But why are we pulling it out for just the public television?
Public television came, Madam Chair, public television came to us and said it was unworkable for them in their current funding scheme, and the other organizations were okay with it. Because, you know, there is a tremendous amount of private fundraising on for all of these. The question is, can they match it to the legacy funds or not? And public television told us that they couldn't. And they, you know, if as this bill goes on through its process, if those people change their minds and tell us it's unworkable, we'll go back to the more easy form of asking for shared funding. Matching funding, sorry.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just that one actually kind of, I mean, as I look at every one of these now, Como Park Zoo, all of them have that same eligibility. So it seems to me that we're offering some different treatment to public television. So I'm not sure if that's a good precedence to be setting here.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn brought something up, and I, as long as we're here and she brought this up, I'd like her clarification on it. She just mentioned that the entire bill isn't necessarily in front of government operations, and a few times in the past week or so when we've had government operations meeting, which is unusual since it's several weeks after the committee deadlines, but we have only seen small portions of major bills. And I'm looking under Rule 4.13 about and trying to understand the jurisdiction of Committee on Government Operations. And I can't find anywhere in there where it says that just a portion, the committee just has jurisdiction over a portion of the bill. And, in fact, the language seems to indicate that it says the Committee on Government Operations has jurisdiction over a House or Senate bill that establishes department agency, et cetera, or has rulemaking authority. And I'm trying to understand this process of committees now just having small portions of bills. Frankly, it's difficult to when you're looking at small sections of bills, to understand the whole context of the whole bill. And I'm wondering, first of all, if it's in here somewhere that I'm just not seeing it, and second of all, if this is the procedure going forward, if it's only happening in government operations, or just explain and clarify the rule.
Thank you, Representative Pepperin and Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, the new requirement this year in Rule 4.13 for government operations matters, and also in 4.16 for our government data practices matters, is contained in the last paragraph of Rule 4.13. In the past, before this year, omnibus bills, including this omnibus bill, did not have to go to government operations and data practices at all. They had an exclusion from having to go to government operations and data practices. This year, the new rules adopted a provision that says they have to go, but the rule did not say that the actual bill has to go. The rule says that the referral requirements do not apply if the Committee on Government Operations has already approved the bill or the substance of the matter that would otherwise require a re-referral under this rule. In operationalizing this rule this year, the practice has been to have the Civil Law Committee and the Government Operations Committee meet on either other bills introduced, like the introduction of House File 1782 by Representative Hansen, or on the provisions within the omnibus bill as the author and the chair choose. The way I have read the rule is that if this bill is taken up on the floor and the Government Operations Committee has not approved the bill or the substance of the bill, then under House rules, the proper motion should be to refer the bill to the Government Operations Committee for a review. if the Government Operations Committee has already heard the matter, either in another House file or and it has approved the substance of the matter, then the rule is waived. Finally, the rule gives the Speaker and the Chair of the Government Operations Committee the final determination on this.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. McCormick, is that paragraph new language that was passed earlier this year, the last paragraph? Is that new language, or are we just reinterpreting it differently?
Madam Chair, that Mr. is McCormick. New language passed this year with our House rules. It removes prior language which had exempted these omnibus bills from having to go to government operations or data, civil law, and substitutes this new requirement.
Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, Mr. McCormick, I don't recall in past years ever having just portions of bills being heard before, and it seems like all rules, and anytime there's a committee or commission that or task force came to government operations, are you saying that wasn't the case, that in past years they have not done?
Madam Chair, that members, in past years, any omnibus bill had an exemption and did not go to government operations or to civil law for these provisions. There was an explicit exemption for those bills contained in this rule. So in the past, author of an omnibus bill could put in a rulemaking provision or a commission or a waiver of data privacy and be exempted from having to go to those committees. And so, yes, it was a relatively common practice that in omnibus bills you'd find those sorts of provisions, and those hadn't gone to the appropriate committees. By the way, that was a long-standing exemption in the Minnesota House rules.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, Mr. McCormick, did that also apply to expedited rulemaking?
Madam Chair, yes, it did.
Okay, thank you. I do think it's that's something that we should address again, because I think we should reconsider next time we look at rules, because it's not particularly helpful, and it's, you know, really just serves as a rubber stamp when you get it when you go to government operations and you're approving a tiny little section with no context about the rest of the bill. It doesn't serve any purpose whatsoever, and I think that when we look at these again, we really need to, seeing how this works in operation now, I think we really need to look at re-referring the entire bill so that we have context of what we're actually voting on.
Thanks, Representative Pepin, and we can surely talk about that. I do think the good part about the rule is that there are provisions that are being considered by the proper committees dealing with civil law and with government operations, and they're not being placed in omnibus bills and not considered by the proper committee. Are there other questions on the A60 amendment? Seeing no other questions, Representative Hansen renews his motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those say no. Those opposed say no. And the motion is adopted. There is one last, the A62. So anybody who is offering the A62. All right, then. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1183, as amended, be passed and sent to the General Register. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And that motion is adopted. And with that, members, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.